Your stuff is so wild. Like, it's so avant-garde, so strange. It's like, how do you know something works?
I mean, I have to find it funny.
Yeah.
You know, I have to find or be like fixated on the idea in a sincere way. But then it also has to have this kind of like ring of like, and this feels so pretentious, but for lack of a less pretentious word, poetry.
What I'm getting is you're a poet.
No.
Your words. I'm going to echo back what I'm hearing.
No, this is the lead clip.
I'm a singer. I'm a poet. I'm an artist. But I'm also a man.
Oh, no.
That's what I'm hearing.
With needs.
That is the voice of the great John Early. John Early is an incredibly talented and funny and sweet person. He's got a new comedy special that came out on HBO Max called Now More Than Ever. It is such a funny special. It's really one of a kind. It's a sort of a mix of sort of cabaret and stand-up. There's a band called the Lemon Squares. There's like sketches. It's very avant-garde. He does an amazing impression of Britney Spears singing. There's a cover of a Neil Young song. Like, it's just like a really extraordinary mix of things that come together into this visionary comedy special called Now More Than Ever. It was nominated for Critics' Choice Award, which Old Man in the Pool was as well. So I'm going to see him in a couple weeks over at that. You might know John from Search Party. You might know him from his special he did with Kate Berlant called Would It Kill You to Laugh, which was nominated for an Emmy. We have a great chat today. We are in the year of 2024. And I'm hitting the ground running with my Please Stop the Ride tour. I was just in Big Sky, Montana. I'm heading to Vancouver, Seattle. Well, I think all these are sold out at this point, but then I'm going to, here's what isn't sold out, Florida. What's up with me in Florida? I'm going to be in St. Petersburg, Jacksonville, Orlando, Miami Beach. Here's my theory. I'm exaggerating. A lot of people are coming to Florida shows, but I do think like, Jacksonville, for example, has fewer people, and I think it's because years ago I did my Thank God for Jokes show there, and I got some complaints on like the Ticketmaster reviews that it was too dirty, which actually, that show, I curse a whole bunch more than I usually do because it was the nature of what that show was about. So anyway, Jacksonville, join me in Jacksonville, and then Orlando, Miami Beach. These are all going to be super, super fun. Then I'm going to Colorado. Basically, any town in Colorado, pick one. Aspen, Beaver Creek, Fort Collins, Denver. I just added a third show in Denver. And then I'm everywhere in Texas. Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Troy, New York, Rochester, Toronto, Atlanta, Charlotte, Richmond, Washington, D.C. We just added Los Angeles and Chicago because the people have spoken. They've demanded I do a show in Chicago at the Chicago Theater and at the Ace Theater in Los Angeles. Tickets at burbigs.com. Be the first to know by signing up for the mailing list. Today I chat with John Early. He also recently directed the stage show of Jacqueline Novak's special Get on Your Knees, which is coming soon to Netflix, which is fantastic. And he and I know each other through that because I worked a little bit on that. We were in a music video together. You ever see a video that Taylor Swift did called Anti-Hero? John and I play brothers. We're the imagined children in a dystopian future along with the great Mary Elizabeth Ellis. We talk about that today. I hope you love it. Enjoy my conversation with the great John Early. When I was first introduced to you personally, it was because you and I both worked on Jacqueline Novak's show.
Yes.
I was like behind the scenes a little bit, and then you directed the show beautifully.
Thank you.
Get on Your Knees. And Jacqueline, I remember being like, her way of describing you is, John is very serious about craft.
You wouldn't tell. You couldn't tell.
So I love your special. One of my favorite parts of the special is the multiple times that you put a spotlight on your parents. One of the times you say, I love anal or something,
yeah.
And then you go hard spotlight on your parents. Yeah. How much do they know and how much don't they know?
There was like this beautiful moment in 2015, maybe 2016, when I did that to them for the first time. And they had no idea it was coming.
Beautiful moment?
They were truly like, I knew where their tickets were. It was at Joe's Pub. And we had the most like clean shaft of white light on them. And they were totally shocked. And it was like the most transcendent moment of my life. And
they must love your comedy then.
They do. Okay. They do. It's really, really cool. It's really sweet. And my parents were ministers.
Yes.
And Presbyterian ministers. And then I kept doing that to them like once a year, like at the Bell House and stuff. And so they knew it was coming. But I do think just like the cameras, the energy in the crowd, their response, like them hunching over is like completely genuine, you know? And I think it was a thrill for them. I would like to think it was.
Aww.
It might also be considered elder abuse in some circles, but they love it.
Did you come up Presbyterian?
Yeah. I went to Presbyterian church every Sunday till I was 18 years old. I went to this place and did like youth conferences and I sang the songs.
Yeah.
That was like the most meaningful thing for me. And the only thing I remember from church.
That's how they get you, by the way.
Literally. I'm not kidding. It's like sensual pleasures like singing. But I stood next to my mom and she like harmonized. She was such an incredible alto. And that honestly is why I like music. It's like from church.
You and Beyonce.
Yes. Well, we have that in common.
Oh, and also your Instagram handle.
Yes.
Beyonce.
Yes.
No, but it's like
Houston is similar to Nashville.
Is it?
Yeah. I do feel actually a kinship with Beyonce. And like there's like, it's like, sorry to people who love Houston and Nashville, but they're kind of like soulless cities.
Oh, wow.
You know,
shots fired.
Yeah. Sorry.
Two cities.
Like there are obviously great things about both, but like they're just a little like corporate.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's in me and Beyonce, like high achieving, like, like type A.
That's in me and Beyonce.
Yeah.
People always say that about you and Beyonce.
Yeah, always say that. But I feel like Beyonce and I are both Tracy Flicks.
Oh, interesting. You know?
Like I really
you're, and
do.
You're looking at another one.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah.
And you have on your Instagram, you have this video of you on local Nashville television. Being asked about sex when you were like, I don't know, 14, 15. Yeah.
Iman Anthony and John Early are just beginning high school at University School, but they know a lot about sex, and they say that has helped with their personal decisions.
It's not this whole, like, what is sex? You know what it is, therefore you have the choice to do it or not, you know? It's not this big, like, question, just like, it's not being hid from you all the time. I think it's probably better that we're exposed to it.
And your answer... 14-year-old John Early is so earnest. And when I watch that, I'm like, that's the kid you're making fun of now on stage.
Yes, exactly.
How much are you doing an impression like of that kid?
I mean, he's like, the reason that video is so funny and is also like literally still so painful for me to watch, even though I put it online, you know, it's like, it is... I seeing myself trying to be such like a good little student, you know, and a good little boy is like so heartbreaking.
That's
to
the
me.
Tracy Flick, yeah.
And I think that so much of the thing I'm doing on stage, someone argued too much, but so much of the thing, especially in the special, is and especially with my parents,
and
being like kind of like, you know, fuck you, you know, like just being a little angry adolescent, like it is this very delayed rebellion.
Yeah,
because I mean, there's video proof in that news clip. It's like that I was completely buttoned up, and you know,
yeah, so was I. I was just full rule follower, student government.
I mean, I remember telling like when my friends would like want to like try drinking, I'd be like, we don't need that. I'd be like, we love pop culture. We love watching. We love watching movies. Like, I don't need that.
Oh, my God.
Like, it was like, thank God in some ways, but I'm also
thank God
like...
God is the operative word. Thank you for...
Clearly, I keep bringing it back. But, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, in some ways, it's like, you're so earnest as a kid, and we have video proof of it. And then at a certain point, was there an inflection point where you're like, I'm going fully ironic, and I'm going the other way with it?
Definitely. I mean, that's... Once I started doing comedy, it just was this opportunity to kind of correct the course a little bit.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, the reason why this special is particularly special to me, I think it is because there was, like, finally a synthesis of, like, the incredibly earnest part of me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the, like, and then the little bitch, you know.
The little punk.
The little punk who needs to, yeah.
Yeah.
And that... Is that
and a singer?
Yeah, which is the incredibly earnest part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
The song choices help kind of cut through that, but like the singing itself is earnest, and it is just about wanting people to have a good time or wanting to move people in some way, you know. And like I've never filmed it because I was embarrassed by that desire.
This is a weird thing to say about a comedy special. I feel good. Afterwards.
Totally. I mean, if that's the goal of also ending with I Feel Love. It's like just like I wanted people to feel like they were like leaving a party or like, or like the party was still going on, you know. And that's also why Bette Midler and Sandra Bernhardt are like such, they're like my primary live performance influences, is because of their relationship to music, especially. And like they don't do comedy songs.
Right.
They just kind of like they'll be wild and hilarious, and then they just click into a totally sincere song, which is kind of old school.
Your stand-up, like my stand-up is very, in a certain way, straightforward, in the sense that I go to clubs, I try out 10 jokes, and I sandwich them in between 5 minutes that work at the front, 5 minutes that work in the back. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I have new jokes.
Yeah.
And then I formulate those jokes into a thing.
Yeah.
Your stuff is so wild. Like, it's so avant-garde, so strange. It's like, how do you know something works? And how do you know you're like, that's it?
Well, you know, I guess in the kind of traditional sense, like I do, like I did go on tour before this, and it was very clear very quickly what worked and what didn't based on people's responses. But I also think just internally there does have to be a feeling of like, I mean, I have to find it funny.
Yeah.
You know, I have to find or be like fixated on the idea in a sincere way. Like it can't be kind of reverse engineered. You know, it's like it has to be something that I genuinely find funny. But then it also has to have this kind of like ring of like, and this feels so pretentious, but like, for lack of a less pretentious word, poetry. Like a little bit of like Who are you even looking at?
Looking at the wall.
But like, I just, it did have a kind of like I was trying to sincerely, underneath the silliness, say something, communicate a kind of like despair about the state of the world, knowing that it was maybe a little abstract.
Yeah.
But there was like something very sincere underneath it, and feeling that people were, that I didn't have to explain it, that I could just kind of like drop it and people understood what was underneath it, and that part of the joy of it and what was funny was that it was abstract and I was just going like,
yeah,
you know, like that's, it's very vague what I'm saying, but it, that was
what I'm getting is you're a poet.
No,
your words, I'm gonna echo back what I'm hearing.
No, this is the lead clip.
I'm gonna echo back what I'm hearing. I'm a poet. I'm a singer, I'm a poet, I'm an artist, but I'm also a man.
Oh, no.
That's what I'm
with
hearing.
With needs.
That was in my sexual prime in Brooklyn in my 20s. Which is one of the lines from the show that I love. I wasted my sexual prime here.
It's so real.
It's absurd.
It's so incredible.
That's a very
real
confessional moment in the special, I think. Because it's like a thrown away ironic line, but like there is a sense under it that like, oh yeah, he probably feels that way a little bit.
Oh, well, it's literally how I feel when I walk onto the stage. I'm like, what did I do? I'm like, I'm looking out and I'm like, and I have fans, like people like me, and I like didn't have sex.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah.
You're still in your sexual prime.
Thank you.
You're a young looking, good looking guy.
Yeah, thank you.
But don't do that thing that you just did. That's not sort of codifying.
Got it.
Do you know what I mean by
that? Yeah. So it's pushing people away.
So let's do it again. We'll do it again. So you're a sexy young man.
Thank you.
That's one of the things about.
Thank you. Just want to get it on record.
You're just a deeply hilarious person. When you and Kate were working on your sketch show, which is nominated for an Emmy.
Oh, wait, thank
did
you.
Did we get that?
We got it.
Okay. That must have felt good, right?
It was insane. It's so crazy. I can't believe it.
That special's a riot. But thanks. When you're working with Kate, like, do you break each other?
Yeah.
To a point where it's like, come on, we got to make our day. We got to get these things filmed.
And I'm worse about it than Kate. Like, she is really, like, it's part of her genius, or it's like part of what helps her keep going. I mean, she's just like, she's so committed and it's so real.
Yeah.
And like, in order to achieve that level of realism, I feel like you have to fully do it. Whereas I'm like always on the edge of like laughing.
So you're a poet. She's a genius. And then,
I can say that without any embarrassment. She's a genius.
She is.
But yeah, I really have trouble. It's impossible with her.
What are you going to like? This wasn't one of our questions, but it's like, what are you going to do? I want to see more of shows like the special. Are you going to tour with more of this?
Yes. I mean, that was the thing is like touring that show. And I wonder, I mean, you tour all the time.
Yeah.
But like, I really barely do it. And like, I was like so maudlin after those shows. I would like go home and like call Kate or something, you know, and I would be like, bursting into tears. I was aww. Like, this is like the most incredible experience I've ever had in my life. Aww. I was like, and I'm sure I'll lose that, you know, as you go on. But like, but I really was like, this is heaven. If no one ever wants to put me in anything,
yeah,
like again, like I would be so happy doing this. This is like a dream. So I really, really would. And I feel like I figured something out with the music and the comedy and like integrating them more. And I want to keep going with that.
Yeah, because I think, like, I get that because I feel like you're giving people a completely original performance that isn't, it's like how you felt about Bette Midler.
Thank you. That's the goal.
I think they are experiencing that.
I hope.
I think they're like, we just saw. Sometimes Jenny, my wife, will say this to me. She'll listen to the audio recording of like me doing shows in DC and she'll go, you know, you shouldn't make so many jokes at your own expense that you're working out new material because it is a special experience for the audience. So if you start to say that, it might take a little bit away.
Yeah.
And the fact that you are giving it your heart.
Yeah.
There are jokes that might, the show that you're doing is unlike any other performance night ever again. And that,
yeah.
The couple hundred people in that room are the only people who will experience that.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I'm the same way though. I'm like, I have to preface, let people know like it's messy or in process or something, you know, and like, but it is, it's like when you see after a show's over and you see someone and they're like, that was so great. And you're like, it wasn't, like last night was incredible.
Yeah.
You're like, last night like was like, the audience was insane. And it's like, right. Fuck you, I bought tickets to right. your show.
Totally. Yeah. When you and Kate came to The Old Man in the Pool and came backstage, I was so moved by it. But I was also like, I was nervous that you're in the audience because I'm just like, I have that thing of like when people I admire in the audience, I think about it the whole time.
I know I completely understand and I don't know what anyone's supposed to do because yeah. It's like you want people to come and then you're like, great, now I'm
right. Now paralyzed. I'm performing. Yeah. For this person who I admire so much.
It was so cool seeing you at Lincoln Center.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, and backstage with all those posters.
Oh, yeah.
It was so cool.
Well, yeah, it's all these original. There's the artist did that one right there in the bottom left-hand corner.
Oh, yeah. So cool.
When you sing Britney in this special.
Yeah.
you make the joke, you go, shout out any Britney song, and then you yeah. and then you go, I, you know, like, I heard album 3, track 3.
Yes.
It's like such a joyous thing, and then you sing album 3, track 3. Britney, do you know the other songs? Do you know 10,
I know,
do you know
the
10
singles.
Britney songs?
Yes, because she has 10 singles, at least. You know, like, I was never, like, an album Britney stan, but I was very into her as a phenomenon, you know, and so like,
yeah.
I was very, I subscribed to Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah.
Like, as a middle schooler, like, that was my idea. I asked my parents. So I was like, again, this is the Tracy flick. I, like, knew the box office. I was like, oof. I was like, Wild West did not do well. Like, like, you know, I knew the letter score that they gave every movie, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Do people ever, when you were touring it, because obviously you got the rights to that Britney song.
Yeah.
When you were touring, did you ever do any of the other songs?
No, I only, because we only prepared Overprotected.
Oh, you did?
Well, so with that band, we've done probably over the years, like, 8 Britney covers, you know, but none that we would be ready to just do on a moment's notice. We have to really rehearse. And, like, so Overprotected was the choice. I had gotten the rights, and that was what we were going with. And the joke was just going to be, I will stand here until someone organically suggests
That's
Overprotected.
So funny.
And sometimes it really, like, it never happened quickly. So it only, like, but sometimes it really just, like, would not happen. And, like, and I would have to, like, coerce it in other weird ways. Like, which was always so fun and fun. Once people understood what the joke was.
So we were in Taylor's video.
Yes.
You and I have this thing in common, which is not only were we in the video, we get asked about it, I think.
Yeah.
In every interview.
Well, in every family function now.
It's a lot. Because we're a very small part.
Truly.
Of a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
How do you, what's
it's hard?
It's hard. It's hard for us.
It's been hard.
How did she know you? Did she know you from Search Party or like how? Or that,
yes.
Yeah. And then did she just text you?
Via Jack Antonoff.
Yeah.
Who I, of course, know through Jacqueline.
Yeah.
And you. But like, yeah, just got a text from Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Same.
Like,
same.
As I was like on my back after like a surgery and I was like, this is crazy. And of course, like the responsible thing to do would have been to say no because of my back. But I was like, I have to do it.
This is how, for me, this is how bizarre that shooting that video was. I texted you and I said, just like, hey, because that was, you know, I knew like it was a secret.
Right.
And I don't know who knew they were involved and who didn't.
Yes.
And so yes. I didn't.
I think I knew.
Yeah, I didn't want to ask anybody because you don't want to bother these people who are all like major moguls.
Yeah.
So you just go, I'll show up on the day.
Yeah.
But I texted you like, hey, are you doing anything secret like July 19th or whatever it was?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I might be, yes, you know. And it was just like very cryptic.
I know. It was so top secret. That was the coolest part about it, was like getting there and the call sheet said something different.
Yes.
You know, it was like for a different video, like
different
Taylor's
video.
Version or something, even though it was actually the new single.
Yes.
And that was really cool.
I thought what was really cool on set was, because she directed it, was, first of all, the script was really funny, I thought.
I know.
Immediately, I was like, oh, this is hilarious. And then second of all, I was like, she's really good at directing us and also the background actors.
I know.
Like, just
and, like, so calm and easy breezy. It was, like, so nice.
I feel comfortable talking about it with you here because it's a thing that we share, but like I try to avoid it in like every interview because it could be cut up and decontextualized.
Yes,
and I'm just like,
yes.
Ah.
Well, I didn't. Yeah. I've already experienced that where I like told a story on a podcast on Mike. No, sorry. Your Mike.
Yes,
on Moshe and Natasha's podcast. And where they were asking me about it, and I told this story, which I think is so funny, which is like where the joke I'm trying to talk about my own just like deeply embarrassing moment where she was talking to me about, like, I think because I asked her, I was like, is this the lead single? I think is what I said. And she was like, well, you know, the music industry's changed a lot. They don't really do like lead singles anymore. They kind of like post like Beyonce dropping that album with all the videos at the same time. It's like kind of like you like do it all at once now, or you do a bunch of things at once, you know. She's telling me this, and I found myself going, I was like, we gotta get back to that time. I was like, I miss that. And I meant it completely.
Of course.
I really was like, I miss, like, I'm talking about the Britney, like the Entertainment Weekly of it all. Like, I miss witnessing the narrative, the press narrative, the drama of here's the first single, first video, and then a few months later you get the next one. Like, and then it's sustained.
Yes.
You get like a year of like four videos.
Yeah.
And it's just so much easier to kind of take in instead of like everything at once, you know, whatever. But I meant it. And I was like, make this the first single. I was like, that's genius. And then I realized, I was like, I'm talking about the video that I'm in.
Yeah.
Like, it's so transparent. Like, it looks like I'm just like, yeah, make this one the first single. Oh my gosh. Like, because I'm in the video. Like, and I was like, oh no. Like, I felt so embarrassed afterward. I mean, she probably didn't think I was doing that, but I was like, mortified. But then, like, I told this story, and this will happen again, but I told this story on their podcast, and then because people are, this is what I didn't realize, it's like there's an army of people,
full-time job,
it's either actually their full-time job or it's fans who
they've decided
are unpaid.
It's unpaid full-time job,
and are
full-timers.
Just like combing through everything that's said by anyone ever,
yeah.
And they're looking for any mention of Taylor, and they're like, you know. And then there were literally multiple articles that are like, John Early convinces Taylor Swift to make
Antihero
her first single.
No way.
And I was like,
no way.
I'm
it said John
die.
Early convinces her?
Yes, like as if it was John Early's idea.
What a nightmare.
And I was like, she's gonna see that, or her press people are gonna see that and be like, that asshole, like, going around telling people it was my idea to make it the lead single, which it, of course, was not the point of the story. The point of the story is that I was like...
Did you reach out and say, hey, just so you know, this thing?
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. I thought it was best to stay out of.
Support for Mike Birbiglia's Working It Out comes from Helix Sleep. Helix has been with this podcast from the very beginning. We are huge Helix mattress fans over here. Let me tell you a few things that are great about Helix Sleep mattresses. They are fiberglass free. Unlike other brands, Helix mattresses do not contain fiberglass, which can be harmful to your health. As you may have seen in the news or on social media, there have been a number of health issues and lawsuits related to fiberglass and mattresses. You know, actually, I used to have a mattress that was pure fiberglass. It was literally a bed of fiberglass. No longer. I sleep on Helix mattresses, which are fiberglass free. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/burbigs. That's helixsleep.com/burbigs. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long with Helix. Better sleep starts now. No, now. So this is called the slow round. So do you have a nickname from your life that was really good or really bad?
Well, the good one is Beyonce, which has stopped.
Yes.
And I've now, you know. The bad one is one that in sixth grade, I tried to tell everyone to call me Bo because my middle name is Bowman.
That was in sixth grade?
Sixth grade. I was like, call me Bo. And not one person. It never caught on. So that was bad.
Call me Bo. Nothing.
It's just Bo.
And it was your middle name?
Yeah.
B-E-A-U?
B-O.
B-O?
Yeah.
John Bo Early. Does anyone call
John Bo?
John Bo.
I love actually Johnny. I love when people call me Johnny. It's like... It's so sweet to me.
Can you think of a time where you were so scared you ran away?
Oh my God. Literally, yeah. I remember when I like, came out, or sort of, my friend, the first person I came out to was like my best friend in middle school. And she was like, I wasn't coming out to her. She was like, we were like talking and I thought I was being coded. Like I was like, cause I wasn't ready at all. I had no intention. And I was like, but I thought this was coded. So I was like, you know, when you've told someone something like your whole life, I was like, but then you realize that's not true. And she was like, yeah. and then I was like, but then you realize it's not true. And then you have to tell them, but you're worried because they think the original thing. And it's, and I literally was like, and she was like, yeah. And she was like, are you? And then I literally went, like Roadrunner. Was like, and I like ran
my God
to the bathroom, like at our school, we were at school, and I like ran and I like closed myself in the bathroom. And then like, I was like, oh my God, I'm wet. And she was like banging on the door. And then I finally like got out. I was like, la, 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 la. And like called my parents to come pick me up. And I was like, la, 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 la. Like,
oh my God.
And then they came and picked me up. And I like, and she was like laughing. I was like, it's okay. But I like physically ran.
It's like what she was expecting you to say was something so short.
Yeah, totally.
So then after you ran away into the bathroom, eventually you probably came out.
A couple days later, I had to go back to school. You guys remember?
Yeah.
And and it was just like, you know, she was like, hi. You know, it was like it had happened without me meaning to, basically.
And then after that, did you come out to your parents?
Not for like 6 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
They knew, though. I mean, they knew. I knew that they knew it was hell. And I was like, but then I just like, you know, I did a little, I guess I did it in person with my mom when she like visited me in college. But and, with such, I was like glaring as I did it. Because I like refused to make it a moment.
Glaring as I did it. I totally know what you mean of where you refuse somehow. There's something in you that's like, I'm not going to let you have this.
Like the Hallmark version. I'm not doing it.
Right. I'm not going to do the Hallmark version. I'm not going to let you have like a narrative in your head. Yes. And that's when John sat on the bed and he took my hand and he said, there's something I have to tell you.
No, I was like, truly.
And then what was her reaction?
She was really hilarious about it. Really great. Like, I'm very lucky. I was like, you know how I procrastinate? I'm like mad at her for no reason. I you know how I procrastinate on like papers?
Oh my God.
And that's, she was like, so yeah. Funny. And I was like, well, I do it with like life stuff too.
Oh my God.
And she was like, yeah. And I was like, and then she said something kind of genius and I'll never remember, but it was like, does this have something to do with you answering the door to like my like uncle from West Virginia wearing your sister's communion dress, like first communion dress or something? And I was like, yes, it was genius.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
One of my first jokes in college when I started doing stand-up was after a friend of mine, my best friend in college came out to me and it was he said, I'm gay. And I said, I know. He said, I'm in the closet. And I go, yeah, but the closet has an NSYNC poster on it.
Literally did it.
I mean, it might as well. Yeah. I mean, it was just like long. It was long overdue.
That's really funny.
Yeah. The
baptismal gown.
Baptismal gown.
I just want to make sure I'm representing her work on this podcast.
Do you want to pick it up?
Nope.
No? Okay. Moving on. Did your life go the way you thought it would?
I mean, in some ways, yes. Like, I was hoping for the kind of like the Bette Midler thing. Not I want to be absolutely clear. and please leave this in, Mike.
Sure.
That like the like when I'm talking about Bette Midler, I'm in no way compare. Like I'm not trying to say like I have the voice, okay, or you know whatever, or the cultural impact. Some would argue it's impossible to even have that cultural impact anymore with the fracturing of media. But I did want to be like performing in New York.
You're saying you're a modern day Bette Midler. Yeah. Let me make sure I'm getting it right. You wrote me an email where you said, Mike, it's John.
There's no email.
I'm a modern day Bette Midler. Do you understand me? And if you don't, I'm not coming on the podcast. Sincerely, John Early. Why did you write that email?
I was scared.
I was scared.
But yeah, in that sense, yes, I wanted to be in New York doing shows. So you
sort of saw that for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Even when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Sex is real.
Sex is real.
Sex is something people do, and you can choose to do it or not to do it.
Sexually, no. Like, sexually, I thought that was going to be really different. I thought my life would be very different. Like, I thought gayness would be really different.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I thought, like, you know, I thought romance and sex would be very different. And it's, of course, turned out to be its own surprising, often enjoyable thing. But
when you said often enjoyable, it
seems like never.
It seems like yours a hint of irony.
Yeah.
Often enjoyable.
Was it
because
I looked directly in the camera?
Oh, gosh.
But in terms of, like, you know, art and performance and stuff, yeah.
Do you think you're more romantic than your partners?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah.
You're such a sincere person.
Yeah. I can be a little treacly or schmaltzy or, like, you know, and that's the Presbyterian in me. That's the, like, that's like
that's
the Southern.
The Presbyterian in you? The Presbyterian. Yes. The Presbyterian Church has made a statement.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, they said, we do not stand behind John Early or any of his statements about our
There's
church.
There's no printer. Like, I don't understand. It's happening.
But what do you mean by that? That's the Presbyterian.
Well,
I
think there's like a kind of Protestant kind of
right.
Oversimplified, maybe kind of like.
Right. We're going to do this the right way.
And I'm like cooking and, you know, like.
Right.
And I think that's in me. And it makes me, as a romantic partner, probably a little insufferable.
Interesting.
And maybe sometimes enjoyable.
Like you want things just so.
Certain things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. And I don't like it. It's a life of pain. Being like that is you're signing up for a life of pain and just constant disappointment. And it's so unfair to your partner.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like they're always like, they have to measure up to something they don't even know. They don't, you know, you're like, you have some weird narrative about how a birthday should be, or, you know, like, or how a meal should go, or how meeting the parents should. It's like, and they don't share that.
For sure.
And then they're, like, always falling short, you know?
It's funny, because there was, like, an article in the Times over the weekend about, like, the things you should never say in an argument in a relationship.
Yeah.
And I was reading them, and I was like, some of them, I was like, yeah, maybe a variation on that episode. Maybe, you know, I was, like, pretty good on the quiz. And then the one that made me laugh was to never say, I never said that.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like it nullifies what the person's concern is.
Yes, and it's like legal.
It's like legal. That one spun me in circles, though, because I was like, but what if you didn't say
it? Yeah, what do you say if you didn't say it?
It was the only one where I was like, yeah, but like, what if you didn't say it? And
you
then the
say,
person
I'm sorry
says
you
said
felt
it.
Like I said that.
I'm sorry you felt like I said that, though I didn't.
Yeah.
But then that's
or
like
you
the
just,
rule.
Having not said that, comma.
Having not said that.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the best piece of advice anyone's given you in your life that you used?
Mm.
Or for that matter, like, were you ever at Tisch and like you had a professor who said something where you're like, I'll never forget that.
Yes, I had one teacher who was like, and I do think this is like, it's like it was like a really straightforward physical note, which is why I was receptive to it, because it wasn't, it didn't feel like therapy, but I actually knew what she was saying was like very profound. She was like, John, you're like, you're always like, your neck is like always like this. Like you're like, your head is always up here. And she's like, you just have to let us see your face.
Yeah.
She was like, just like, put your head down. Like move your chin down. And it was like, and I was like, oh, and I was like, oh my God. And like when I did, I was like, like I didn't cry, but I really did feel like, oh, I am very deliberately kind of not letting people look at me.
Wow.
And I do think, I do think that like you just do have to let people look at you. You have to like let the camera like sit on your face and like let it like, you just have, that's like basically what it is. And that can be very hard.
Yeah.
and there's so much contemporary acting too. That's like the camera, because people are so used to the camera being on them now.
Yeah.
That's not like looking at a camera and like putting your image out there. There's nothing that no longer costs anything.
Yeah.
That's not scary for anyone.
Yeah.
But doing that without doing this.
Yeah.
Pursing your lips and changing your voice a little bit. So it's a little down here.
Yeah.
Like that. I'm like, so much acting today is this. And like, I'm like, pushing your voice down and like, you know, and like, it's like,
this is great, by the way.
You gotta.
What you're doing right now is what we want. Can we just, we're going to re-record. We're just going to have you do whatever this character is.
Thank you.
Oh, we'd like an hour of this.
I actually do want to do that. I really, really want to do that character.
Oh my
but
God.
I, no one's giving it to us. No one's speaking or singing in their real voice anymore. No one's, it's really, it's an epidemic.
Yeah. What do you think are people's favorite thing about you and least favorite thing about you?
Favorite thing about me is probably like, you know, a good time.
Like, my God.
I'm funny. You know, like I think I like to bring people together. I like to, I'm a social person. I like to bring people together. I think least favorite thing is probably this exact thing we were talking about of the kind of like romantic or like
Presbyterian.
The Presbyterian thing in me that's like the sentimentality.
Yes.
That is in its way, as I've learned over the years, it's like it is kind of coercive. Like that is what people don't like about sentimentality. It's not just a sentimentality itself, it's that it's like, you know, it's like, feel this way with me. It's like, you should be up here with me. And it's like, people are like, ugh. Because I hate that. I hate when people do that to me. That's why I like was repulsed by like church, you know?
You're making me realize in this very moment that I am guilty of that.
And that's okay. I think a lot of performers are.
This very rarely happens on the podcast. No, I mean almost never.
Yeah.
And what I'll say is I love the thing people love most about you and I love the thing people love least about you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it as your friend. I mean, we don't see each other all the time, but I feel close to you and I feel like I appreciate both things about you. I've been with you and I feel like I've witnessed both things and I think they're both wonderful.
That's very nice, Mike. I have compassion for it because it's like, it is basically like the question we all grapple with, which is like, or choose not to grapple with, choose to like run away from, which is like, is life meaningless or, you know, and do I create my own meaning or is it happening to me? Like,
right.
You know, and that's, I think sentimentality comes from a desire to like, for things to be meaningful and to not look at the void and, you know.
To format things into rituals, and meaningful symbols.
Which can be so helpful for people, you know.
No, completely.
And also suffocating for those closest to you.
Oh my gosh.
Working It Out is supported by Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. I should point out that this is an ad for Squarespace, but I love Squarespace. I was thrilled when they became an advertiser because we've used them for years. Our website for Thank God for Jokes was Squarespace. Our website for Stand Up and Vote was Squarespace. Couldn't recommend it more highly. We use it all the time. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell memberships or courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or ebooks. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, head to squarespace.com/birbigs, B-I-R-B-I-G-S, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/birbigs to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Support for Working It Out comes from Aura Frames. Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? This is the perfect thing. Aura Frames. It's like a Wi-Fi connected digital picture frame. Jenny and I have these at our apartment. We love them. Super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. I can't say enough about these Aura frames. So we got them and we loaded up a bunch of photos of like our daughter when she was little and at different stages of development or at different ages, us going to the beach and just vacations and all these kinds of things over the years. And then it just flips to the next photo and the next photo, like every, you know, whatever you put it at, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. And it's wonderful and it just kind of warms up a room. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com. Use code WIO at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. All right, I'm going to just tell you a couple bits I'm working on.
Okay.
And if you have thoughts on, or memories or anything, if it strikes anything. And also feel free to throw in any, if you're working on anything that's sort of half-baked right now too.
My God, I wish.
I wish. I tell like a long, elaborate story about my daughter going to birthday parties and how essentially like when your child is 8, you go to birthday parties like 365 days a year. And you're just like, she has 8 friends.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
There's some kind of fraud going on here. I think some of these kids are claiming 20, 30 birthdays a year. And they're just, all these kids are just so excited.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's just so excited about being alive, except me. And
that's
I have to
real.
Drive. And you really want the driver to be excited about life. That's the other half-baked thing is I took her to this birthday party at this place called Urban Air, which is hell. And I've gone before to Urban Air, and I was just like, I'm not going in again. So Jenny went in with Luna, and I circled the block. I have a joke in my show right now, and I don't think it's ever going to work, but uh-huh. It makes me laugh. Good parents take their kids to birthday parties. Great parents circle the block.
To always be ready?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my
yeah,
God, yeah. That's so good.
Circle the block. It's like one of those things that sometimes in my shows I'll go like, you know, you might come see me in 6 months or a year. And you go, that's funnier. That's yeah. better. And you know, a lot of times I'll be like, that joke will not be in the show. But that's yeah. a perfect example.
Yeah.
Like, the circle of block thing, just the metaphor doesn't complete.
I don't know. I think it does have its own internal poetry. That I'm always chasing after, as you know.
Speaking of which, like when you were directing Jacqueline, what do you think was the most helpful note you would give consistently for that, in that show? Because I love that show so much.
I think just like, I mean, it was like all her, obviously. Like directing is a bold, you know, name for me, for my title. But like the thing that I just think was like always reminding her to like, to not forget. And this is just such a basic kind of theater thing. Is like not to not forget that people aren't hearing this for the first time. Because like
yes.
She has such a brilliant mind, and like, and her arguments, plural, are so like dense and like intricate, and like, and she was very focused, obviously, on the clarity of those arguments. And I was always like, well, part of the clarity can just be like pretend like you're at dinner with me,
yes,
and just talk to me across the table and like explain it to me how you would explain at dinner, and like I would be like, you know, like dumb, you know. And so you would really slow it down. And like, you'd be checking in with me to see if I'm getting it. And, you know, so it was always like dinner, just like keep it at dinner. And that'll help lock you into a kind of relationship with the audience.
I love that. That's great advice. I feel like I've both given that advice and received that advice from my director, Seth Darish. I have to hear it.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's one of those things. No matter how many times you hear a piece of advice, if it's as good as the advice you're saying right now, and I actually would project that out to anyone who's listening to this, who's a comic or a solo performer. It's like, remind yourself every show, they have not heard the words.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know the words.
Yeah.
It's an entirely new concept.
No, I know. It's crazy. And it makes it so much more fun.
Yeah.
And I think there's like something, I think Jacqueline and I relate, like we both are very kind of embarrassed by like the fundamental like premise of comedy sometimes, of like that you have, like the kind of the social contract is that you have to kind of say it as if you're saying it for the first time, and your eyes have to dart up to your memory, and or like you pull words from, even though you know what the word is.
Yeah.
You still have to kind of perform like you're like kind of figuring it out. And like,
yeah,
it's, and there's something, I think we both are like, so like, ew. But then it's like, well, then the other, then what are you without that? Like,
yes,
without that device of like working through it for the first time, you're like completely figured out. And like,
right,
what, you're like a performance artist who's like saying words, you know, it's like, it's so generous to be, it's so much more generous to pretend to be conversational and intimate with an audience than it is to do some sort of strange thing where it's already figured out.
Right.
You know?
Where you're like presenting your thesis.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Totally.
I brought you here today to convince you of one thing.
Yeah.
And then this is the other one is, so Jenny and I, for our daughter's 6th birthday, we asked her, we go, what would be like your favorite thing that we could do for your birthday? And she said, I want you and mom to dress up like clowns.
That's so sweet.
So Jenny and I went to a costume shop. We got the full makeup. We got full outfits. We woke her up on her birthday. We said, happy birthday, Una. She started crying.
No.
And I think she still thought she was in a dream.
Yeah.
And we were just like, no, it's us, you know. And then we're just like, we're so sorry. What's wrong?
Yeah.
She goes, when I said you should dress up as clowns, I meant that I would walk you around town and people would laugh at you.
Oh.
And that's when I realized.
Like sadistic that, little girl.
That's when I realized that she wanted to be my manager. She wanted to make 10% on top of 100%.
Well, this has to go in the show.
I love this. Jenny literally said the other day, because she was listening to the show, she goes, like, it's almost like the title of the show should have something to do with clowns.
Yeah.
Because it's like there's something metaphoric about the way in which we try to please the people who we love.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, we're clowns.
Yeah.
The last thing we do is working out for a cause. Is there an organization you like to donate to? I will donate to them. I will link to them in the show notes and encourage others to donate as well.
I would like to choose.
Why The Voice? Why The Voice?
Because I just do want to let the audience in on my search for the actual name of this place. Which is
what
the
search?
There was a search. We took a break to search the National Nurses United, the largest nurses union in the country. We all in 2016 got very charity pilled. You know, it was very like, here's the thing that you can donate to. And I think giving to unions is a smart way to make sure your money is getting used directly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I will contribute to National Nurses United. I will link to them in the show notes. John Early, I never say this. I don't think I've ever said this. I feel like I have a lot of thinking to do. a lot of thinking and reflecting.
I'm honored.
It was a very deep conversation. Thank you so much for being here. And,
thank you.
And I urge people to watch your special. It's one of a kind.
Thank you, Mike.
Working it out, cause it's not done. We're working it out, cause there's no one.
That's gonna do it for another episode of Working It Out. I love talking to that John Early. You can check out his special, Now More Than Ever, on Max. You can follow John on Instagram at BeJohnSe. Like Beyonce, except it's BeJohnSe. And you can watch the full video of that interview on my YouTube channel at Mike Birbiglia. Check that out and subscribe because we're going to be posting more and more videos there. Check out Birbigs.com to sign up for the mailing list to be the first to know about my upcoming tour dates. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Peter Salamone and Joseph Birbiglia, associate producer Mabel Lewis, assistant producer Gary Simon, sound mix by Kate Belinsky. Special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music, J. Hope Stein, and our daughter Una, who built the original radio fort made of pillows. Thanks most of all to you who are listening. If you enjoy the show, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. You might tell your friend, and you go, hey, you know how you've been meaning to tell someone something? And you say, hey, there's this thing, and I know I've been putting this off. And they're like, right, Working It Out. It's a podcast where a comedian talks with comedian friends, and they work out jokes. And you go, yeah, that was easy. Thanks for working it out, everybody. See you next time.